Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined by two great experts this hour to explore where we are collectively as Americans in this moment, why we're seeing some of the electoral outcomes that we are seeing. And we've been exploring two conundrums, my word, not the experts, two conundrums. We're going to get back into conundrum one and move on to conundrum two, but let me reintroduce you to these great guests helping us all get a little bit smarter. We've got Professor Barry Burton of the University of Wisconsin, Madison Professor of Political Science and Director of their Elections Research Center. We also have Professor Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School's pollster. He joins us frequently. I'm so pleased to have you both with us. Professor Burton, before we lost you at the tail end of the last segment, I wanted to ask you about conundrum one. And I thought Charles queued it up very well. We are all becoming, and generally speaking, not just in Wisconsin, but beyond, a bit more tribal. Less folks swinging or splitting tickets, less votes, less folks flipping from a Democratic presidential vote in one cycle and then voting for a Republican. But beyond that, what I have seen just generally overall is that when questions are asked that are quite specific about what I'm going to call signature top-line Democratic policies and priorities, they do pretty well. You either get a plurality or over a slight majority. Whereas when you drill down with some of the MAGA policies, with Donald Trump's policies, folks get pretty uncomfortable with those. So to engage the dialogue, and you could drill down even more and say the more informed people get, the more news they consume, those striations are even more extreme, more acute. I call this the platitude versus the particulars. I think Republicans are very good at top-line, pithy messaging. I think Democrats, people who are undocumented do get free health care because Ronald Reagan passed EMTALA, and if they have a broken bone or they have a heart attack, instead of saying it's illegal and it's been that way since the Medicare Act was adopted. Do you see the same phenomena, that Democrats tend to struggle with messaging? They're in the details. I mean, it conjures up recollections of Al Gore and the black box and the interwebs, but I won't go down that lane of memory too far. Professor Burton, what do you think about this conundrum?
Well, I think it's right, and it basically is consistent with political science research about this. So a really terrific book I'll just plug, I have no financial connection to, called Asymmetric Politics by Grossman and Hopkins, that points out that these are not two equivalent parties on the opposite sides of a mirror. They're pretty different entities. Democrats do tend to win when the discussion is about specific policies, not on every policy, but on many. The public is on the liberal or Democratic side of lots of those things. It's not just today, it's not just during Trump, it's decades of truth on that. Republicans tend to be advantaged when the discussion is about broad principles. You called them platitudes. I think in the book they call them themes or something. Mm. So when the discussion is about ideas like freedom, security, liberty, Republicans dominate. They would like elections and debates to be in those terms, and Democrats would like to argue about what the benefits level should be for Medicaid in your state. Yes. That's harder to communicate about. It's a more diverse set of things, and it's in the weeds. And then Democrats have this other thing that makes them different. They have groups. Now we call them the groups, the online groups, but actually they've always been there. The Democratic Party has been a coalition of kind of different interests, and the Republicans don't have that same difficulty. They have their own challenges in putting a coalition together, but it's not the same. And then I think layered on top of this basic difference between the parties is the Democrats are really struggling to communicate right now. There's no party leader. If you ask people in surveys who they think is the spokesperson for the Democratic Party, you get some answers. There's some Kamala Harris's, there's some Barack Obama's, there's some Chuck Schumer's, and a bunch of other people who might be presidential candidates in a few years or other things. The chair of the Democratic National Committee, unknown to the public. So there's this vacuum in terms of communication, and that, I think, magnifies the problem Democrats generally have of trying to communicate about so many policies.
Folks, again, we're joined by Professors Franklin and Burton from respectively Marquette University Law School and the University of Wisconsin, Madison. CJ, do you have a question or comment for the professors?
Hey there, Maggie. Thank you for taking my call. There's so much I'd love to ask them about, but You know, I wonder about the violence, the political violence. I'm wondering if they heard from or read the Conjugal Network Institute study that was done through Rutgers University. That towards political violence, on which party they consider assassination okay. And the mere fact that Dr. Franklin said 11% said it's okay is scary. One thing that you said, Maggie, is how they've gone into our political camps, you know, both left and right. But one thing, like the professors to speak of, one thing that has changed, black males. Black males decided to vote for Republican higher than any time in their history. And partially because they're tired of being promised that the government is the answer. It's not the answer.
I think there's a lot of complexity going on with some of, especially racial demography and what we're seeing. But I wanted to give you both, respectively, an opportunity to address perceptions of actual incidents of political violence. First, let's turn to you, Professor Franklin, and the perceptions of political violence. And to be clear, I didn't understand your polling question to ask about, is an assassination okay? You asked a generic question about political violence.
No, that's right, and that's a good point. Other polls have shown this, and it's not surprising, that if you ask about assassination, you get 1% or less who say that's okay. When you ask about threatening, you get small percentages. When you ask of is political violence ever appropriate or ever called for, then that's our question, and that's the 89% opposed, 11% in favor. In favor in the sense of saying it can sometimes be justified. Now, you can see an answer to that from both the left and the right. You know, there are folks on the right that would say the American Revolution was an act of political violence that was fully justified. And you can see people on the left saying protests in the streets that include some violence actions are sometimes necessary for change. Dr. King did not agree with that. Famously, the civil rights movement that he built was built on the principles of nonviolence. So I don't think this is an easy question. This is also one where it's 11% that say it's sometimes acceptable, but that rises to nearly 20% among people who call themselves very liberal, and around 20% for people under 30. And so this is an example where, at least in the wake of Charlie Kirk's shooting, people on the left were a little more likely, still far from a majority, but a little more likely to say violence could sometimes be acceptable than were people on the right. However, I would also say when you ask how big a problem is political violence, after Republicans like Charlie Kirk were shot, then it's a bigger majority on the Republican Party that say it's unacceptable. But after the Minnesota Democratic legislators were shot and one killed and her husband killed, then it was Democrats saying it was more important, Republicans saying it's not as important. And so across five or six acts of recent political violence, we've seen this in the polls every time, that if it was your person who was attacked or shot or beaten, you're more likely to say it's important and your opponent's less likely to say it's important. And then that flips just as soon as the shoe's on the other foot.
Professor Burton, political violence historically in this country, civil disobedience, which some might actually consider to be political violence. I mean, again, the terms can be amorphous. What is your view of the relationship between voter engagement and turnout and this extremism and political violence, which has affected folks from both the right and the left?
Boy, it's a good question. I don't think we know the answer to that. It's a relatively new thing in the United States. Other democracies have experienced violence around elections in particular in a way the U.S. just does not have that history until the last 5 years or so, kind of January 6th forward. And some of these movements that have cropped up, Proud Boys and others. So I don't think we know. It's distasteful to most Americans. And I think the polling that Charles has mentioned verifies that. I don't know whether it generally scares people away from politics. It's another reason to not be engaged because now there's a danger involved and it just is beyond the pale, or whether it alarms people and it, you know, and they want to resolve it by other means. And so it encourages them to show up at protests and send money to their favorite candidates and to get out in the midterms.
Yeah, it's a question that I think the next couple of election cycles will shed an incredible amount of light upon. I just want to say this, CJ, if you're still listening, please do send me the link to whatever study it was that you were referring to. The vast majority of objective research that I've seen does indicate that the overwhelming majority of acts of specific political violence over the last 50 years have come from the right. There are, of course, acts of political violence by folks on the left. That it exists from both sides, but simply the raw numbers, and again, objective independent analysis that is longitudinal, covering a large span of time, show that it has been overwhelmingly coming from the right. Let's talk about conundrum number two. We're going to cue this up. And we're going to talk about it on the other side as well. I know Professor Franklin might not want to wade into these conundrum number two waters too deeply, but as we were referencing before, Professor Burden, Democrats have always been this big tent party. They always have multiple constituencies that, frankly, for a very long time, have held differing views about what I'm going to call evolution versus revolution, or incrementalism versus wholesale change. And even our caller CJ mentioned dissatisfaction creeping up with Democrats amongst constituencies that have been so historically reliable constituencies for Democrats. I do personally think some of that is overblown. Black folks, brown folks, Jewish folks, women folks still tend to vote for Democrats. But we have seen movement in the last few years. What is, if you can, in your expert words, describe what I'm calling conundrum number two, which is Democrats with policies that are generally preferred have a messaging problem, and they also have a, hey, can we get it together, everybody, to win this next election problem?
I think it's a real problem with communicating to the people who are concerned about a certain set of issues. And it varies, of course, but look at how Democrats have fallen lower and lower and lower among rural voters over the last 20 years. And this is predates Donald Trump as well. Yes. Trump has accelerated it, but didn't create it. There is a big problem to speaking to the constituents that aren't on your side. Mm. And I think that's true of both parties, but it especially affects Democrats' inability to communicate with the groups that they've been losing support with, including working class voters. Non-college graduates have shifted from Dem to Rep.
Let's talk about that conundrum with Professor Burden on the other side. This is the conundrum. Who is getting served by which policies? And do people actually understand that? We're going to continue this discussion on the other side with my special guests and you, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.